we have enough meetings today.
No, no, let's have, maybe if you were to do this one.
Yeah, why not?
I had three meetings booked at 10 o'clock, oh, which is why at 10 o'clock they called an SES three levels, five levels above me, decided she wanted to have a meeting between 10 and 11. So I said, so that was my excuse.
Well, the worst thing that happened is one of the members, Kevin Hanready, who was on our committee, had to resign because he is a political appointee in the Veterans Administration, so he can't serve on our committee. And so Kevin was finally bossing around somebody seven floors up from him.
I hope I was nice to him.
I see.
That's funny.
I said, he's a deputy assistant secretary. I said, he was on my committee.
Is that considered a conflict, you have to be a part of the...
Yeah, it's not, because he was a political appointee by the federal government.
Well, we didn't see it. It wasn't our conflict.
No, 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 I know, it was, but it was just unusual. I said, he's upstairs.
Then you got more power and influence than we thought, huh?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, it's a message to the Metro Access drivers that I always give, and it was even before I came to Washington, because it's true everywhere, but you don't know who the customer may be. A customer is a customer in front of you riding the van, and the next time you see them, they're ordering an audit of you because they work for the IRS. You know, and you're like, well then, we're going to deliver door-to-door service today.
That's great, we're happy to do it.
So Patrick, everybody's here.
Good, okay, great. I recognize this room, yes, I sort of...
Yeah, absolutely.
Usually where you're sitting.
Christian gave us those meeting topics, and they sound good.
Okay.
We wanted to reorder them.
Naturally.
Naturally, you knew that was happening.
Well, just, there are several things that we've already discussed in the board meeting, and then we really wanted to get the fare policy and bus stop enhancement stuff done, because we've done some good things on the bus stops. And the fare policy, I'll do it really quickly. And just give you the pitch that Alan has done before, that as a board, you deal with social equity, and you also do a fiduciary responsibility. And the fare box recovery from Metro Access is between $7 and $8 million a year. And the board 2 years ago gave up $16 million, and they're trying by giving back the peak of the peak. So I'm not suggesting we give back the full $7 or $8 million, but it's not an amount. And it's a number, I won't tell you who in Carol Kissel's office, who comes to our meeting, said, yeah, we could afford to win a couple of them somewhere here or there, because...
We'll take it out of finance.
Are you sure that's what he said, Phil?
It's off the record. I didn't say it was a heat. And I didn't say it was a heat. But the point is, we can't adjust something. And basically, for the last 2.5 years since we changed the calculation, for the first 2 years before we got the fare calculator in place, there were people that were paying more than they really needed to, because it really was a lottery as to picking what the time was, and as much as $4 an hour too much. If the fare increases that are on the docket go through, those are all doubled for Metro Access, which you've heard over and over again, because the Metro Access fare is going to be twice what it is on comparable bus and rail. So what we're suggesting is two things. One is the multiplier be reduced. Instead of being 2 times the bus rail fare, make it less than that. I've done numbers, and 1.5 times would be a break-even point, maybe a little bit on the passenger side.
You're saying the cost and the income would be break-even? You're saying that?
No, it would be a break-even point for what Metro Access customers would be paying in fares.
Okay.
Yeah, your fare box recovery would be less. Not that much less, because the fare at 2 times, you know, with the increases, if they go through for bus and rail, ours would be doubled on that. But we're suggesting 1.5. But as always, defer to Carol and let her calculate what she thinks is a livable number. But pointing out also that losing $16 million didn't hurt. The other thing that people worry about is a great blast in ridership. And ever since the fare calculator has come in, we've had an increase in eligibility, but not an increase in rides.
Increase use of regular service.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what continues to happen. And the projection that we've gotten from Mark
through Carol, is they're projecting about a 1-2% increase in rides over the next year. So again, reducing the multiplier by 1.5 would not be the disaster of suddenly overrunning the system with too many rides being taken. It would be a financial disaster coming close to $16 million for the peak of peak. The other thing that we were going to propose besides changing the multiplier was, if you remember, the distribution is bimodal. And changing the multiplier will help everybody. But the people that are paying the $7 fare, one of the things, and it's a quote I got from the ADA, ADA requires public entities operating fixed-route transportation systems provide comparable complementary paratransit to people with disabilities. And to be more comparable with our maximum, instead of us being at 7 and bus rail being at 550, soon to be raised to 6, what if we lowered our maximum to 650? And again, I would ask the financial people to see what kind of impact that would have. But that would certainly help the 30% of the people that are at the top. Because that's 30% of the ridership are now paying $7. And that's $14 round trip, 5 days a week for somebody on minimum wage.
It's only round trip a day that you're doing.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're
discussing the fact that we didn't see an increase in the ridership with the lower fare.
So that fear that everybody has had.
But that was a concern, mm-hmm. Yeah. About lowering the fare.
Yeah. But the training program has been so good.
We have not fully discussed those results. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say this much, you know, and I appreciate the way that Phil has articulated this, because I can't dispute the socioeconomic impact, nor can I attest to a specific elasticity on paratransit. That's what Phil is saying, and I appreciate that. But the results so far in FY14 is that the ridership is about 7 or 8% higher than what we had budgeted so far. And this is with the current fares in place. Mm-hmm. So the discussion we've had with the AAC, Phil's point to me was, well, you know, if people are riding anyway, even with the fares the way they are now, that would seem to disprove a highly elastic service, mm-hmm. which then puts you back in the situation of saying, well, then could we not entertain a more lenient fare structure? The issue, though, is the contribution of that fare box recovery toward the total cost of the service, which is increasing whenever ridership increases. And what we've seen this year so far is that people are not riding the service more often. All of the additional ridership is from new enrollees. So even with people riding fixed route more than ever, there are still a significant enough portion of people in society that are going to continue to need paratransit. So the issue for us every year when the general manager reviews the budget materials is to look and see, you know, if this ridership, which is inevitable from the demographics, is going to increase by a certain percent, what can we afford? What's that contribution? He certainly wants the service to be efficient. We should be, you know, carrying as many people as we can for the dollars that we have. And we actually have even seen some productivity gains recently from some of the things we put in place with the new business model. The new providers are proving to be a little bit more efficient, yes. So I mean, that's a positive result. But even so, you know, against the wave of the additional rides that inevitably come, we're back to the same issues that we've talked with the AAC about for a long time. Ever since we changed to the indexed fare, there has been a concern that a portion of the ridership finds it difficult to afford. And of course, I mean, the board at that time established the cap for a reason, because if the $7 cap weren't there, and it was $2 times the equivalent fixed route, I mean, some rail fares are close to $5. Paratransit could legally have been as high as 10. Yeah. So we put in place the $7 cap. So we've talked about this very candidly with each other. And, you know, from a staff perspective, obviously, if we're asked, we can certainly project, you know, different scenarios and different results, but I wanted to share that while I agree with what Phil has said about the kind of, you know, ambiguity of the actual elasticity, the fact is that we've had a decrease in the ridership for the prior 2 years because we went through a better eligibility process and we did a much better job promoting bus and rail, but eventually that runs out. And, you know, we have AECOM that does an actuarial study for us every year, 5 years out, of what they see paratransit ridership doing. And so we've kind of reached the end of the decrease, and it's slowly starting. It was projected to slowly start coming back up by maybe 1 or 2%. Mm-hmm. But the first quarter of this fiscal year, it was more like 7 or 8%. And I know that's been in some of your financial reports.
Yeah, that was the one and that's the first increase we've seen. Now, when we had the momentum discussion about the prediction of what the elasticity was going to be, one of the things I pointed out to them, thanks to our good friends at the VA, is with the new devices that are being developed post-Iraq and Afghanistan, a lot of people that would have been on paratransit are now able to move. Right, mobility devices are good. And the other thing's a little bit maudlin, but people are dying, particularly with the current healthcare situation that's in place. And so, you know, we had a really good discussion and everybody agreed there is no number. It's not a question that this is the number in stone, but there are things that are going to show that the amount of eligible people is going to be reduced. It's also, again, demographically, people are living longer, but we don't know if they're living longer. I mean, the medical profession right now, there is a shortage of doctors, there's a shortage of primary care, there's a shortage of everything. In Virginia, you know how bad we are right now with Medicaid. I'm going down on Monday to Richmond to lobby for that. But so those are all the numbers, and as we always do, we present ideas.
And just also on that, you know, Cornuk sort of compliment Christian and Carol Kissel. We've had a lot of ideas, 7 or 8 that we've run through with them, and they've been very receptive. Looking at the range of ideas, seeing which ones can work, which ones can't work. I think that when we have public hearings, that you'll be hearing from individuals, probably some of their individual stories about how expensive things are, what they can do. You probably hear, as you did today, references to, I'd say, maybe like the GM statement that said there's going to be no impact for Metro Access on the fare structure. And a lot of people have said, well, that was carefully worded with respect to, you're right, 2 times the fixed fare is what we're talking about, but we're proposing 1.5. So, you know, it's a technical argument, I think, that was made, but I think that coming with a multiplier that might be 1.5 or 1.25 or something like that at least gives us a chance to maintain the fares and the status quo the way they are now.
Yeah, when we met with Carol, she had the earlier calculations that the fare calculator is actually resulting in a reduction of about 20 cents per ride.
Mm-hmm. And that's, the ability to use that. To
right, them. And that's over everybody, and that doesn't take into account the 2 years when they were paying more or less or whatever. And so coming up with the 1.5 multiplier, that would have us a little better than break even. And, you know, we basically have to report to you what we hear from the community. And they're hurting. They are really hurting. And that's why the thought was from the committee, do you help everybody with a lower multiplier, which really won't help the $7 people very much because they're still going to be at $7. Or could you do something to help either them or everybody else or a little for each? And we thought multiplier of 1.5 and a maximum fare of $6.50, which is still higher than the proposed $6 fare for, and I know for bus rail people, it's $6 when they get on, but they still have to pay for parking. And gas and whatever. So we're aware, you know, they're aware of us, we're aware of them. And we always defer to the budgetary people. But in addition to the budgetary people, you folks have fiduciary stuff, but also social problems. And socially, we think fiduciarily, 1.5 and 650 will solve both problems. And so that was my pitch, and, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse or whatever, but I think you've heard it from us, and then you'll hear the hearings from everybody.
And that's kind of where they'll be coming, though they may not articulate so much the numbers, as Phil is always good at running the numbers and articulating that piece. So you'll hear different levels of pitch like that.
Now, for buses, let me tell you the good news on buses. Bus stops, major problem, I was at the Virginia Tech last month, the Arlington Tech, and Steve Yaffe does Fairfax and us. And so one of the things we talked about was upgrading the bus stops. And Steve made the point that even with the money, it takes a year to get them upgraded because of all the red tape at the level of Virginia. Today we talked to Jack Hambury, and he said, you think Virginia is bad, you want to deal with Maryland in PG County. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing this Monday in Richmond with the MS Society is talking to our legislators to see if they can put a little pressure on VDOT to streamline the process for accessible bus stops. Because right now, by the time you go through VDOT, the environmental people, the water district, and all the others, even with the money, they're slowed down as to what can happen. So we're going to do that with the MS Society. When we get to meet with the various commissions and their advisory groups, hopefully the board will approve a statement that we can make to get them moving, but also you can get your lobbyists.
I agree.
And remember the piece you wanted to state about working back through the...
Do you have... I've made that point out personally to, I know, in Prince George's County, to the county executive and the CAO and their staff there, and I agree. I don't believe throughout the system it's an issue that is not elevated sufficiently for people who have impaired mobility and people who don't. It's a serious issue. Do you meet with individually with the jurisdictions, or do you have any dialogue with them directly? What do you do?
What we do is I am a member of the Arlington TAC, and Doris Ray is a member of the Fairfax TAC, and we have other and
Montgomery County for me.
He knows Montgomery, so we have a rep to Alexandria to each one. And we're going to try to do that. Actually, Regina Lee, who spoke to you guys today, who chairs the bus stop, has worked with the woman who has done the bus stops in Montgomery County, who evidently knows the shortcuts. And so she's going to try to get in touch with her and put together a workbook for the different jurisdictions of how Montgomery County is able to move through the Maryland red tape and get theirs done faster than anybody else.
We've been in touch also with the commissions within the jurisdictions, and we understand that they're very interested in transportation, working on the bus stop issue. We want to make sure that in talking to Christian, his staff, and you guys, that we are going back to the jurisdictions with the proper message so that we're not giving mixed signals, so that we're all saying the same thing. So we are, you know, we've gotten a letter out, as Phil said earlier, to TPB that states, you know, what we're doing, that we're in support with them. One thing I wanted to compliment last month, that there was a presentation that we had on a GIS system that that went through all the, that was a presentation of the bus stops and how they were set up and their level of accessibility. How many points was it? 75 or 80 accessibility points? 75 accessibility points. We gave them maybe 5 or 10 more. And that was just fabulous. They talked about the, you know, what all the bus stops look like in the jurisdictions. How are they were going to roll that out? The fact that, you know, it was going to be done in, I think it was June or July. I mean, number one, I started this 20 years ago, with they'd roll out the project and they'd barely come to this committee and talk to us. That was way back in the days, pre-Christian. But now they're coming to us with, you know, 6 months, and this is what we want to roll out. And I made the suggestion that we take the Metro Access map, see if we can overlay it over the GIS map, so that can help us to prioritize where we need to put emphasis on the bus stops versus the Metro Access. And we said to Jack today,
Can we do that? Absolutely. Said the same thing to Christian. So, I mean...
Because we did that for the grant last year, because that was one of the prereqs of the federal money that it had to be a metro access bus stop.
Right. What we get is, yes, we can, yes, we can, yes, we can. And what we have is the ability to take a system over here, a system over there, combine the systems to give, I think, some very good planning data for the board. And I mean, I think that's one of the things that excites me being on the AAC, is that we can take some systems that you have and help to study the data points to move it together.
Well, they said, yes, we can, but they also said, yes, we will, which is even
more important. Well, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Well, so, while we're on buses and money, just a quickie. Yep. From the Finance Committee meetings, there is some extra money this year that wasn't spent. And the discussion was, what do we do with it?
Oh, that was yesterday.
The board members are looking at each other saying,
one of the potentials was returning it to the jurisdictions, some of it to the jurisdictions. One of the suggestions I think you might want to think about is, if you return it to jurisdictions, you could earmark it for bus stop accessibility.
I think it would. Well, I want to talk about bus stops in a larger sense of it, because it's coming to customer service either March or April. I'm not sure which one of those months.
March.
And so I think and hopefully what we'll do is see some of the TPB's regional data as well as ours.
Well, that's why I wanted to just interject for a second what the steps staff is taking based on what you've heard. The letter that the AAC sent to TPB was to urge them to prioritize the improvement of bus stops in their grant process. That letter went. I think they get that. And then, of course, they're going to go through their evaluation of projects like they do every year. But now this is one of their priority items. It's part of the criteria that when projects come in, if they have bus stop improvements in them, then they're going to be weighted more heavily. So we've started there. The AAC has called in from all of the DOT staffs from all the jurisdictions and said, tell us what you've done so far. So they provided the results. Fact is, obviously, most of the stops in the region are not accessible.
Right.
But they have reported back to us their relative funding abilities and the steps they've taken so far. Tomorrow, my team is going to go to the JCC. And we're going to do what Mr. Downs asked us to do last time, which is we have a graph that says for each jurisdiction, you've done this much, and here's 100%. But if you moved your bus stop improvement up to some ideal place between where you are and 100%, you could still have a significant impact on reducing the dependency on metro access. So we're quantifying what each jurisdiction can do to put a dent in this problem.
Which is a financial incentive.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, as Mr. Downs also said, that he thought that it would be helpful if the jurisdiction's data was comparative, so everybody could see relative to each other where they are. So we're going to show that to the JCC, and I'm going to simply ask them, the board has asked us to come forward in March at the Customer Service Committee to report out on this. So do you want to accompany us? To what extent is there jurisdictional data that you can produce? Because otherwise, WMATA staff is going to show the board, the data that we have. And the AAC, of course, is going to be a part of that, kind of advocating for further effort on all of the above. So in part of what we're going to tell the JCC also is that there are three criteria right now for what an accessible bus stop needs to have generally. And we are adding a fourth to say we're recommending that it also, even if the stop itself has all the bells and whistles, that the pathway to it from the nearest intersection needs to have a curb cut as well, so that way, it really is usable.
And as possible a traffic light.
So we're putting all of that out there. And then, of course, all of this ties to our GIS database. We did do a bus stop inventory several years ago, so we do have these larger data points on which stops are accessible and which ones aren't. And we're going to do exactly what Patrick said. We're going to overlay.
I always like when I give you work.
Well, we always do what you ask. We're going to overlay the metro access ridership where they are, where they live, and say, okay, well, if we've got groups of people that are taking metro access near these particular inaccessible bus stops, then we will recommend the improvement of those stops first.
Yeah, it's a crucially important issue that I'm really invested in. I think it needs to raise to a higher level, much higher level. If in not to diminish the accessibility for persons with impaired mobility, if you could also overlay over that the overall ridership that emerges from each of those bus stops and the particularly where the pathways getting there are inaccessible, I think that it's the more concentrated or the greater numbers that you can evidence to those stakeholders of the people that will be impacted by those improvements, whether it's 1 or 10 or 100, it's still important, but the greater we can make the numbers and demonstrate, the more we can get their attention.
The better selling points. Yeah, great.
Important.
Yes.
One thing that I could suggest that you add to the analysis is that when you're calculating the improvement in bus stop accessibility by jurisdiction, it's an easy calculation to show how long it would take to get to 100% accessible bus stops at the rate that they're going right now. In a lot of cases.
That will be a telling number.
In a lot of cases, it's 35 years.
Well, let me put some reality to it, because I want to tell you, do bus stops every day. And I think there's a huge commitment. The problem is, I think it's not just regulatory process. There's a lot that's engaged, and the greatest length of time I come from, I find that we have a problem with is when we have to acquire easements, and many of the things we're talking about are communities that have chosen not to put sidewalks and bus stops in, and therefore you go back to do that, and the investment is humongous. I think the other place we should layer is access for seniors. Mm-hmm. I think the next population that is the normal access, metro access of a rider is that senior that loses mobility. Oh, yeah. And the more that you're able to keep that person mobile and using other alternative forms of transportation, the better. And I think that will help you with the data and the analysis in terms of what's the cost and what's the benefit return to Metro, because that's where it goes. And it is we have a lot going right now, and I think it would really be good to go back to the regulatory process and see, do we see the same parallels throughout the region about the regulatory process? Because
The change is an eminent domain should help with the easements.
Well,
I mean, that's a Supreme Court decision.
It is a change in eminent domain, but depends on what your jurisdictional view is. Eminent domain is not a short process. You've got to walk your way through. Okay, no, it's still no, no, and no, and now it's number six no that I've stuck, and how long that takes.
But the good news is, when there are 385 bus stops that need to be done, you can be working on the one with eminent domain while you're fixing the ones that you don't. So do the easy ones first while you're doing eminent domain.
I apologize. I'm sorry. The only additional point I would make is that I think that from our own messaging across the board, and I talked about this a little bit before we talked about it, the transit system is not just the buses and the trains and that core infrastructure. It is the complete infrastructure that creates that framework. It's there.
We have it in the complete streets. I mean, right. If you go back, we have the tools.
And we have the tools, but we need to sell it jurisdictionally. There's got to be ownership of it. Yeah. And when we talk about changing the bus routes and things like that, oftentimes the greatest criticisms that I hear in public hearings aren't just that the route goes from moves from here to over here. It's you're putting it over there. That route doesn't have a sidewalk. It's dark. I have to, you know, it's the ability to get to it that oftentimes is perilous for the rider. Maybe more efficient. It may actually pick up more riders and bring more revenue back. Mm-hmm. But it's a more perilous situation for the rider. Mm-hmm. And we've served our fiduciary responsibility here, but we've undermined the passenger across the board.
Well,
that's owned by the jurisdiction.
It is an environmental issue, and I think that's one of the reasons why, and we appreciate the leadership that you provided by basically giving us permission to expose the issue and to get people to talk about it. You know, I think there is a desire, certainly we look to you for guidance on how to influence things in the jurisdictions too, because I mean, we're certainly talking to them at the level that we can. You know, in D.C. right now, the mayor has kicked off an age-friendly task force that we are participating on, and so I've attended some meetings there for Mr. Sarles where there's been a lot of discussion about, can seniors in the district age in place? Is there infrastructure there? So some of these issues are coming up there. Another one that has come up is Medicaid. You know, I think I know, Mrs. Hudgens, you probably remember when it was probably about 4 years ago that I came before the board and said, you know, we got 1,200 applications for Metro Access last month from people who were in the Medicaid program and they downsized. Well, now we are being approached by the various jurisdictions to say, you know, we are looking at the Metro subsidy bill and we are realizing that we actually could spend less money if we did allow the Medicaid Transportation Group shoulder some of this work, as well as the human service agencies too. So we do have a pilot right now. I know we'd sent you a memo on the one in Montgomery County that is now at the halfway point and it's worked like a charm. They are receiving as good or better paratransit type service from a provider that's being paid through a state grant instead of Metro Access, and the state's paying half what would have been charged through the Metro subsidy. So every time we do something like that, all of these things collectively go towards solving the problem and could free up funds. You know, but I guess the question that I have is that it sounds like what I'm hearing, and maybe Phil, this is clarified, this is what you meant, that even if money is there, that it's the ability to apply that money through regulation. You know, because what we're teeing it up is we're saying, we're showing you what the need is, we're showing you which stops you could fix that would have the maximum benefit, and now we're asking you to go forward and do it. And some jurisdictions already have the funding and some of them don't. So the question becomes, well, if you do have the funding, but you can't apply it and actually make that money go do what it's supposed to do, well, then those are barriers. Mm-hmm. Those are additional barriers that we're seeing, which reach into the political arena.
You know, while we're on transportation, just as a quickie for Kathy, because this is Virginia, Greater Washington had a list of all of the bills that are being introduced to the legislature that I know, and we're going to be lobbying against them on Monday, but we're at a disadvantage in Arlington because all of our legislators already I hate lobbying.
Why didn't you put this at the top? I didn't know to start reading it.
I don't even have to ask. Across the water.
Well, you know, we try our best to teach people little by little.
Fortunately, the two Senate elections weren't the right way.
So
they can block them at the Senate.
So I think on the bus stop, on the bus stop side, I guess we wait for direction back from Christian and the JCC.
What we were going to do is they're going to put together our PowerPoint.
Right, exactly. That's my point.
And then we'll practice
right, exactly.
it for you guys.
Okay.
And then we'll send our reps out to the different tax.
Well,
different
we're going to the JCC to basically say to them, please carry this message back to the DOTS to talk about that. Because in March we're going to come and we're going to have the presentation to the Metro Board. We're going to share the information we have. And then you all will certainly be in a position at that point to opine and tell us, you know, what you'd like us to do.
I think it, this is to kind of go before you, but I think it would be helpful that after the customer service piece comes and it goes forward to the board, hopefully with something to go forward, that we really go out to the DOTS with the very, to the transportation, we're at transportation committees of that,
right.
to get to the legislative folks about the urgency that we have. And I want to be cautious because I know we are extremely urgent about it, and I think Arlington, it is a funding issue. I don't care what it is, and so it's back to the same old discussion. It is trying to be in balance with all the other needs and trying to make sure. But I think the data that we can use to show where this is such a return in value for us in the whole quality of life for folks as well as the economics of it, it helps us in that.
Because it can sometimes get trapped in the public works budget discussion as opposed to the public policy discussion around accessibility and transportation strategies and planning. And that's where it needs to get to legislators and to people who are examining from a public policy standpoint, not just the people who have to make the budget balanced and weigh those priorities.
And that public policy set of issues is far broader than just
absolutely transportation. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Place.
I do like the idea. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of having a PowerPoint, though, so that as we go trooping out, we've got one set of data. We're saying the same thing. I mean, I also do some work on the Governor's Committee in Maryland, bicycle and transport, bicycle pedestrian access, pedestrian safety. And, you know, that would be something that certainly I could bring up to that group, even though most of them are bicyclists, there's a pedestrian access bent, and since I chair the legislative committee, being able to use something like some of the money in the gas tax in Maryland to be able to get some sidewalks in some of these jurisdictions would at least be a start.
Let me raise one other, particularly on, I know in the Prince George's side, but on the Maryland side, the heavily, and you probably already know this as well, but one group that heavily influences public policy around transit and access is on the Planning Commission side, which is not part of the government, technically.
Right.
And it's I would encourage you to work on that side of the fence, particularly on the Prince George's County side. There's more accessibility there, but in terms of highlighting the issues around public policy and planning and accessibility, it's okay. Distinct from it's arcane, but it's distinct from the transportation folks, but critically important in terms of influencing, particularly when it comes to influencing the county council, the legislative side that actually approves the budgets and the dollars. So mm-hmm. that's a big advocacy opportunity. And generally, you find a lot of advocates on the planning side. I love a lot of planners. Some of them I don't like, but I like them.
Well, you know, we dipped our toe into that.
Oh,
by starting, well, I don't mean we've gone to the commissions yet, but we, in working with Sham on the regional plan and 2025, and just every chance we've gotten to point out that if we don't incorporate accessibility into future planning, that the cost of paratransit eclipses all the great plans for fixed route improvements, and we don't want that to happen. So we've been trying to insert that in some of the long-range plans, but I think, and we actually have something to show you gentlemen, by the way, on the way of the PowerPoint, that we've already built something, that we will be able, once we have this discussion with the board in March, I think that's exactly what the outcome could be.
Right.
That it could be that what we present is here is a picture of what constitutes an accessible stop according to us. Here is a picture of what's going on in the region and kind of where we think we need to go. And here's our pitch. And the board says, we bless you, go forth, send this message out, you know, to the multitudes, and we'll do that. And then, you know, you could also, I mean, we could come back and report our progress to you periodically.
And the more things we can put in there is how this can get done. I see some of it is public works budget, some of it is planners, as they create new subdivisions.
Well,
putting in the bus stops has to be part of that.
Public bus stops and sidewalks, accessible, are part of the general approval process. And that's why I always encourage people, new is good.
Yeah.
Because old probably isn't ready.
Sure.
It is good. I just want to leave this one, though, because I think what we're saying is something that's even higher policy decision making, and it's one that we're looking at from the human services side. And we don't want it to be thought of as human services. So But there is such a big effort on health in all policies. And that's what we always forget. And sometimes in transportation, public works and all those things, you kind of don't think about that. But you can draw a line down to whether it is going to be healthy benefit that can return from this. And it's down in the dollars. It's down in the dollars. And so if you use the transit dollars, mm-hmm. and if you use the other dollars that you subsidize people in terms of what it takes in order to maintain their health, you save tons of dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, it works quite.
Well, we were doing models of respite care for MS people, and one of the best respite cares are the centers that have been set up sort of like a daycare for people that need it, and they have to be able to get there. And so if there is a transit to get them to the rec center for their day of respite care, when the rest of the family that are taking care of them can have a day off and relax, you've got to have transportation. Mm-hmm. And we run into that in Virginia once we get past Fairfax County and into the rural areas because the transit stops at the county line.
That's one of the reasons why that Maryland pilot has a lot of importance, because the human services agencies are afraid to spend any money on transit. They're running away from that because their cost, the HHS budget being what it is, healthcare situation being what it is, they don't want to spend. So what we've shown them is that if transit will be their friend and kind of prime the pump and give them a little bit of assistance, they can help themselves. And when we started this conversation, you know, this goes all the way back to when Mr. Cato was here. We went over to the FTA and we tried to have a discussion about could we get HHS and transportation federally to talk to each other? And, you know, the FTA folks told us, they said, you know, well, we do have some, we have a red phone somewhere that we can pick up, you know, but we don't use it.
Disconnected.
Yeah. Wrong number, you know. Just didn't work. So we had to kind of step up and say, well, if everybody says they won't pay, then we're not going to get anywhere. So we're trying to find ways, collaborative solutions, where we offer Metro's in-kind expertise. And, you know, whether it's grants or whatever other sources we've been able to find to convince the human service agencies to work with us, you know, we're hopeful that'll catch on.
So I think we only have one more, or maybe two more, unless you want to give some.
Well, there was the other one on the bylaw update, whether you want us to update our bylaws or not.
It's been 5 years. I think 5-6 years since we've updated them.
What we had done is interesting in history. We reported to you.
3 years?
3 years.
Okay.
The very last year we reported to GM, we spent a year writing a set of bylaws. And then suddenly you adopted us. And they threw out what we had worked a year on. Exactly. And so what we might be able to do is put a working group together and take those bylaws with the ones we currently have, because there was a difference between us and Iraq, as we pointed out, that we really ought to vote for leadership after someone's been on the committee for a couple of months to see who does things. And serving 2 years rather than 1 year gives you a chance until you people get sick of us.
Yeah, right.
Don't want to see Patrick.
There you go.
That sounds reasonable.
What, the fact that you don't want to see us?
No. That you get
like my wife.
A look at a blended bylaw.
The other thing, you know, that we've seen as sort of going forward, and we've instituted, we don't have a place in the bylaws or whatever, is we put together, off the subcommittees, working groups. And we found that in some of the working groups, particularly the lighting project being one, non-committee members have come in and really taken kind of control and done a great job and produced a product and kept us on the straight and narrow.
We get unpaid consultants.
Yeah, I mean, and so we find, I think we're finding that also. I was talking with one of our members who was looking at the stations and the way the trains are coming in and the height of the trains versus the platform edge and the gap and all, and she's thinking that it might be good for us to get a group together to do a station by station analysis of which stations are good, which stations are problematic. At least it would give us data that would be relevant to this particular disability group. So the working group concept is kind of developed, but it's not anywhere in our bylaws, and I think it would be good for us to be able to go through and say, this is how we work, and give you guys a chance to sort of beat up on what we have, and anyway.
Well, in fairness to the staff, I do have to say that we actually suggested the working group concept when the fairs discussion started, because when we try to facilitate the meetings and make sure that the regular agenda is carried out, those discussions always were more lengthy, and Phil has been doing an excellent job chairing that working group. We want to make sure, though, that there isn't a working group for so many things that staff support becomes an issue, because I do have to tell you, I have one person who is solely dedicated to supporting the AAC presently, and I know Loida can share, you know, that from supporting the RAC, it's a lot of work, and it becomes, sometimes it can become unwieldy if there are too many of them. The people who come in from outside the committee who want to participate, some of them are advocates. Certainly they have a message, but like with the gaps, I mean, you know, we invented, Metro staff person years ago invented a gap reducer that we tout everywhere and say, you know, we have an acceptable gap that every time that we're, you know, we do a triennial or an FTA audit, you know, we get a great score, that, you know, we've been able to handle that. And Patrick has been very good about saying, well, you know, there's no harm in investigating something. So if we want to take another look at it, and a segment of the ridership says, well, your gap might be compliant, but we think, you know, that another level of quality or standard might be necessary, there's always a cost. So, you know, the one thing that I just caution the committee is that we're happy to facilitate any exploration that they may want to do, but there is also...
Some time to prioritize.
Right.
Exactly.
Having learned from Christian, what you do is you find out what your problem, and when it comes to current capital improvement, there's a lot of platform work being done right now. And if we find platforms that are a gap problem, and, you know, the one that's...
You can fold
exactly.
It in, mm-hmm. Right.
And when they're replacing it, make sure they do in fact replace it to solve the problem, not trying to just...
We learn from each other.
Yeah, see, I'm a good student.
He learned, he did learn from... That was very smooth,
Bill. I listened to
the
young people.
The one thing I would suggest about the fair calculator, think about an argument that if we're proposing a 9% increase in bus fares,
yes,
the impact for people who are under the cap is in effect 18%.
Exactly.
Using the bus fares as
18% of the bus fare, still only 9% of what they pay. They just pay more.
Well, the way the
percentage increases,
right,
is the same in both,
yeah,
cases, but the impact is greater.
Yes.
But what we had Heidi, who spoke to you this morning, do, I had her calculate specific fares with the different levels of the doubling, because you've got three or four different fare potentials. And I said, take the maximum and minimum. And so we will have that to present when we do our presentations at the meeting.
Right. It's not as severe when you're proposing a 3% rail increase,
right.
Yeah. Right.
But it is when you're proposing a 9% bus increase, because a lot of access riders get calculated based on...
Goes to the bus. Right?
Goes, yeah, to the bus.
Yeah.
That's right.
And since you brought up the bus, let me tell you, we agree 100% with the GM to get rid of that 20-cent surcharge. We told them that before we put it on, that it's going to, the reason it's in is not to generate revenue, it's to speed boarding, and it's slowed boarding.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Particularly since they've been so good at getting everybody smart trip cards, but places to load them haven't followed suit, so people are smart enough to,
right,
load them
on the
bus.
Yeah.
And unless you do what they do in Germany, which is have the money pot at the back of the bus rather than the front of the bus, it's going to slow things down.
And we know, I did hear this morning, the new pay structure that will be coming on board in the next year or so that you'll be piloting. And I'm sure that we'll be involved in looking at that for accessibility and making sure.
And they're a good group. They did,
yeah,
a good job, like California.
Yeah, we should make sure that within that universe of 2,000 riders, we get...
Mm-hmm. Right, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So
in,
we...
In the pilot.
In the pilot.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that would be great for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd appreciate taking a look at that. So that'd be great. What about things that we're missing?
What do you see?
You let us run the meeting.
What do you want us to do? Yeah, we work for you.
You're a supportive board.
We work for you. What are we missing?
One of the things that I've often been, I said it this morning, Access for All improves the system for everybody. Enlightened self-interest about a number of your issues on access, even on fares, has benefits that are not necessarily easy to quantify, but need to be part of the calculation that you present to us. It's the health benefit side, it's the aging population mobility issues, it's aging in place. All of those have mutual benefits from improvement in access management. And I think making sure that when you calculate, it's not just cost, and it's not just fares. It is the other ancillary, easily quantified benefits that are synergistic and are part of what access provides. This should be a no-brainer for everybody in the region. It's not. And we need to sell harder about why this is enlightened self-interest for everybody. It's not, you know, I still get the pushback, like, even from DDA about accessible bus stops at all places in the district. And, you know, it's hard because you got to do sidewalks. And I said, Terry, this is stupid. Look at our access budget for the cost of access service in the district. And if people could ride the system, you'd see declines in that. That's actually a decline in your budget, in your annual operating budget.
So I think we really need to say that number.
Yeah. We need to say the number.
Matter of fact, we're saying today 52, I can remember within this lifetime on here. It was 40 and 35. So just think about that kind of cost. And if you would calculate in number of people using a stop at that cost, think of how long it takes for you to take a one year pay on there. That's right.
Well, we separate.
That's the message that we really have. I have to defend it a little bit, though, because I will tell you the ability to find the funding to put it on the radar is, and I won't say on the radar because I see a real commitment, but I'm seeing these projects coming to me completed, and then I go back and say, but I started it how many years ago?
Right.
That's the problem, because and it's no money now. And to think of the way we use money, you go and, for example, you go and you get a, used to be an enhancement grant, and then you find out along the way as you're getting ready to build this project, you now violated something that money that you need to do. And that money can't be used, and now you have no money for it, and you have the community committed, and you have a project ready to go into design, and you said, you know, we can't do it. And so I think it is really, I think you're right, we have to make sure that we connect it with all of the elements that we say, this is what quality ride is, or accessibility is for everybody that uses our services. When we fund this part, we've got to be able to fund that. We wouldn't leave the seats off the bus. We wouldn't do these other things. So
every single federal highway category, funding category, has in it an eligible cost is accessibility.
Yeah.
No matter what system, no matter what funding program, accessibility is a legitimate cost. And when I get back from DDOT that, well, you know, money's tight. I said, you spent more money on staging for the initial construction of the replacement of a storm drain culvert than you spent in 2 years on accessible bus stops.
It's the argument that we have to intend to foster, and I agree with what you're saying, Kathy. It's hard. At the end of the day, we might think that they're important, but finding the dollars is hard. But at the same time, I think we have to continue to force the discussion, to force the argument, because it's, you know, you're measuring the success with data and with meeting budget objectives, et cetera, but it's really around what the public policy objective is. And we define it to embrace those issues, and then we have to find those issues. And it's, they are investments in our quality of life, they are not subsidies, they are investments to make life work for all of our communities. We don't look at highways as subsidies, we look at them as investments. But it subsidizes people who enjoy driving cars. We need to invest in these tools in a way that makes the communities work, and that's going to take reframing the discussion to, and I wouldn't back away from it at all. It makes us uncomfortable when we get it, but let's don't back away from it.
The universals, I mean, take K Street. Yeah. If you're a business person coming out of the office with a pile of files and you have to go through trees, an access road, and then stand with traffic buzzing by you at 30, 40 miles an hour to get on a bus, that's not someone in a wheelchair, someone who's blind, or someone that's on crutches. I mean, that's just a typical working stiff. If somebody is going shopping and they're coming home and stop off at the stop and go on the way home from the office and they need to get their shopping bag onto the bus.
We've got to find a solution in a way that, exactly, that maximizes the full range of benefit and not to segregate, and that we're going to solve this problem for this set, mm-hmm, right now. Right. Later on, we'll solve that. We shouldn't define the problem in that way.
Yeah.
We can't allow ourselves to do that.
No, maybe there's something else that we could be helpful doing, which is also like, what are the best practices for, yes, getting these, yes, projects done? What are we learning in one jurisdiction? What do we know about federal eligibility?
That's true.
We right. produced a cookbook. Here's the way to get it done.
There is the cookbook for everything that you ever wanted to know about accessible bus stops.
Right, but isn't the cookbook going to be different in Montgomery County than it will be in Prince George's County?
No, not best practice. I mean, this is so much boilerplate. You'll find that.
Okay. Methodology, right? Isn't
yes.
that what
yes.
you mean?
Methodology.
How to get it done. Yeah.
And how to use federal money, how to use other sources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That would be great. Go on interjurisdictionally here about how to approach these things, too. Mm-hmm. So
that's what I was, just like the woman in Montgomery County.
That would be
that
great. We'd love that.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, might as well just get her. Yeah, that's true.
Wonderful.
Good.
All right. You guys are great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our
apologies for having you cool your heels.
Oh, no, we're fine.
So good to see you again. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Good to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Have a great day. Appreciate your staying. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Later.
Okay.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Moore. That was appreciated. And we read your article, Mr. Nichols, on investment versus subsidy some time ago. So, yeah, we understand that.
I have a high horse I'm sitting on, and I'm riding
it. I love it.
Thank you.
Kathy has a red exception for everything.
I am. I'm a red exception.